Styles, and welcome to the latest edition of the Journalism Today podcast from the Media Innovation Studio at the University of Central Lancashire. This podcast is the place where you'll find the liveliest journalists, the smartest academics, and maybe even the most hard-working students talking about the future of journalism. You'll be very excited to hear that I've been working on a series of articles about the government's Care and Cost Review into the future of high-quality journalism. Only my work is focused on what the review won't tell us. For those who are familiar, the review has been criticised from all sides for having too much of a focus on the press and, well, very little focus on anything else. That's sort of understandable, as those legacy news brands are still believed to be responsible for around half of all original journalism currently being done in the UK, more than TV and radio combined, according to the Department for Culture, Media and Sport's commissioned Mediatic report. However, those 1,043 local and regional newspapers considered to be the press are making half the money they were a decade ago, they've shed 5,000 staff and lost more than 130 titles since 2012. Not to mention the recent news that top three regional press owner Johnston Press is drenched in debt and now up for sale. Sure, you could say that they need saving, or you might start looking around for an alternative idea. Well, lovely listeners, that's exactly what I've done for this episode of Journalism Today by heading to the News Impact Summit in Cardiff to speak to three people who are putting community engagement at the heart of their work. First up is Mary-Anne Astell from Stoke-on-Trent Live, which is actually part of the legacy news brand Reach, once Trinity Mirror. She explained how Facebook and face-to-face events are changing relationships with journalists. Then you'll hear from Megan Lucero, director of the Bureau Local, talking about how their collaborative investigative newsroom is changing how the local press works. Finally, I sat down with a bit of a media crush of mine, Andrea Faye Hart from Chicago's City Bureau, to find out about public newsrooms, documenters and more. So stay tuned. You can email us, and why wouldn't you want to? Our address is journalismtodaypodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think. So, on with the show.
Once again, Mr. Chamberlain journeys forth on his mission to shape the new Europe. At Victoria, members of the government see him up. They know that he will face tremendous problems, but they believe that Mr. Chamberlain's unbounded optimism will help him.
So, I am here at the News Impact Summit in Cardiff with Mary-Anne Astell, who's an executive director at Stoke-on-Trent Live, which is part of Reach. I guess for people that don't know, maybe just tell us a little bit about who Reach is. I'm sure people will know its predecessor, Trinity Mirror, very well. And then if you could just tell me a little bit about what kind of the stuff you're doing around community engagement and where you're seeing the most reach, as it were.
Well, Reach PLC will probably be known by more people as Trinity Mirror. Reach PLC is the new name for Trinity Mirror. And it is one of the largest news organisations, including many national titles and local titles up and down the country. Reach spans the breadth of the United Kingdom. I work at Stoke-on-Trent Live, which is the fifth fastest growing title within Reach. And we cover Stoke-on-Trent, North Staffordshire and South Cheshire. One of the tools that we use to engage with our audiences is Facebook. Now, at the minute, there's a lot of people talking about sort of a move away from Facebook, understandably, because obviously relying on a third-party platform to generate traffic for your site is never a great idea. However, Facebook is incredibly valuable to us, and we see Facebook as a real sort of key for engaging with our audiences. We get an awful lot of tip-offs from Facebook, from people messaging our page, pretty much 24/7. Some of the best breaking news stories that I can remember in recent memory came from people just messaging our Facebook page saying, why is there armed police in my street? Or have you noticed that there's a helicopter outside my house? Can you tell me why? But on Facebook, we have our main Facebook page, which we use to have a dialogue with our audience, as well as running several groups. We have a traffic and travel group, which has about 15,000 members in it, and that is basically traffic and travel news that's relevant to people living in our area. And that is one of the most engaged groups in all of Reach PLC. Similarly, we have a nostalgia group, which is smaller but just as equally engaged. And that's a place where people come to share memories, share old pictures, and we talk to them. So people put up pictures and we sort of ask them about what the pictures are. Can we use them? Can you tell us your stories? And that's evolved into actually face-to-face contact with our readers. So just for example, on the nostalgia group, we're going to be having our first meeting at the local museum, of people that are part of our online nostalgia group that wants to come along in person to meet our journalist, which is, I mean, you can't get better engagement with your community than actually physically meeting them face to face.
And you also talked on stage earlier about the organising Christmas, taking back Christmas, as it were, by your journalist. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about that. I guess in answering that question, why you guys are going to take back Christmas in Stoke, I want to know why all of this is important. You know, why do people want to meet journalists, or do journalists really want to meet journalists? Do people really want to meet journalists in the flesh? You know, and why are you leading on this at Reach?
Oh, definitely. I mean, meeting your audience is absolutely key. In the days of sort of newspapers in the past, it very much used to be sort of, we are the journalists and we will tell you the news. So we will decide what you should be reading about. We will decide what's important and we will tell you the news. But now, you know, online, we make the news with our audience. So they tell us also what they want to read about. And they want to read about the key things of crime, health, education. They care about where they live. So it's telling those stories and engaging with the audience at the same time. The reason why we're getting involved with Christmas is, last Christmas, there was a bit of a negative feedback about the Christmas celebrations in our city. You know, people were sort of moaning on social media, not unreasonably, that, oh, it didn't feel that Christmassy, and you know, what more can we do? Surely we can do better than this. So we took that on board. We're working with local partners, including the City Council, and basically saying, okay, well, we've listened to you and we're going to give you the Christmas you want. So we're going to put on an outdoor event for thousands of people. We're going to have Santa there and reindeers and give it a real Christmas feel. And that's been done by our journalists, and that's so important, because to engage with your community and to get them to respond to you, you've got to be a part of that community. And our journalists are, you know, most of our journalists were born in the area, or they've certainly moved to the area and now consider themselves local. And they care about the same issues that our readers care about. So you've got to put yourself at the heart of your community to be able to tell the stories your community wants to hear.
Oh, I absolutely love it. Journalists taking back Christmas. And do you think this is a theme that's going on around newsrooms across the UK, or do you reckon even Stoke-on-Trent Online is unique within your own newspaper group?
I mean, I'd like to think so. I'd like to think that this happens across the country, and if it doesn't, it definitely should happen more. Because when you're focusing on growing audience, it's very easy to grow an audience and get page views if you don't necessarily care where those page views are coming from. But what we care about at Stoke-on-Trent Live is getting a lot of audience, but getting a local audience and getting a loyal audience. We have one of the most loyal audiences within Reach PLC. So that's people who consistently come back to our site. And that's what you want, because that's one of the most sustainable ways to grow your site, is to get people, get them on the site, and get them coming back. And you can only do that by making them feel involved and by being about community.
And do you think this is a bit of a good counterbalance? So I think there's a bit of an accusation that when you're in a newspaper group, or you know, things are being shared across the country, centralised services, it can be a different headline you know, in Stoke and a different one in Shrewsbury, but essentially it's the same story. Is this a bit of a way to counterbalance that kind of generic one-size-fits-all kind of news model?
Definitely, because obviously Reach is all about scale. I mean, we own some big titles, obviously Manchester, Liverpool, Birmingham, as well as other titles like Stoke-on-Trent, Derby, Nottingham, Leicester, etc. It's a massive organisation, so it's very much about scale. And there's lots you can centralise, so trending videos about a royal baby on the way, or trending videos about an election. But each centre will be local, and each centre will be focused on their local audience, because the audience in Stoke-on-Trent is going to be different to an audience in Nottingham, Leicester, Birmingham, Manchester, etc. So it doesn't matter where you are, you've got to tell the stories that are local to your audience. That's the only way to create a sustainable business.
Fabulous. Well, it's great to hear a lovely regional accent like mine, and really great to hear that you guys are doing so well. Bring on Christmas, hey?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cold, clear dawn, Franco's troops move to attack, and Italy's ambassador is out in the field to watch them. The weather is so cold that the water freezes in the cooling jackets of the machine guns as the Spanish, Moorish, and Italian flags move into action. And they're heading towards Tarragona and Barcelona itself.
So I'm still here at the News Impact Summit in Cardiff, and right now I'm joined by my former boss. I called her my old boss, and then I thought, she's not that old. My old boss, Megan Lucero, who is the head of the Bureau Local Party and Bureau of Investigative Journalism. Hello, Megan.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
No worries. Having me would be a bit of a grand description. We're currently sat in the back of a room just having a chit-chat. So, Megan, you guys have just made a fantastic new announcement. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about the news that's gone live as of Monday, 15th October?
So we've just announced that we've got three new funders that are getting behind the Bureau Local. So the Bureau Local was funded by the Google Digital News Initiative, and our funding runs out in March next year. So I have been hustling to try to find people who are interested in seeing us find a future for the Bureau Local. The funding originally was for the concept of the Bureau Local, and now that I think that we've proven the concept is a solid one, we are now looking to build an actual sustainable model off it. So we've gotten money from Google News Initiative, Lane Kelly Chase, and we recently were a recipient of a grant through the European Journalism Centre's Accelerator program to help us invest in a bit of business development.
Fantastic. And for those who don't know, so I guess this, if you've just been through your startup phase, you're now kind of scaling up in some senses. Do you want to just tell us about what the last 18 months have been like in terms of starting up and getting the Bureau Local going?
Yes, so we started just me as a director, then we hired a couple more members of staff, so we were four, and now we're five with a community organizer role, which is currently in a job share, but it still is kind of within one role. So we have five members of staff now. We started off with an idea and now have 800 people who are backing that idea, which has been incredible. We've had over 250 exclusive stories go out on investigations in the public interest. We've opened up nearly 50 different open resources and data sets that we've made available to the public. And we've been holding power to account and changing things both on a local and national level.
Fabulous. So you're calling it a collaborative investigative outfit. And do you want to just tell us about what you think that means in terms of community engagement, why you've decided to get more people involved than just your average newsroom?
Well, I think it's really important that journalists aren't the only ones who are shaping the future of the news industry. And this is a huge part that's come really in the past 18 months of learning about the Bureau Local, is that we knew we needed to solve it, but the more we sort of dug deep in, we realized that we can't solve it alone. And we started out to be collaborative because we thought journalists could help each other. But we've really tried to apply the collaborative model to everything we do. And we realized we need to be collaborative in every element of resourcing and improving our future for the industry. So that's what we're focusing on.
Fab. And you've got lawyers, you've got data scientists. This is not your typical...
Yes, sorry, I should speak more to that, shouldn't I? So we have loads of journalists who identify as journalists. So we've got over 200, coming up to 300 of them. And those are come from traditional outfits to hyperlocal bloggers or freelance journalists, anyone who sort of identifies as a journalist. But then we have sort of all kinds of groups of people, loads of technologists trying to come in and help improve accountability and help improve data in that world. But also, we have teachers, lawyers, and just community-minded citizens who want to participate in what we're calling, committing acts of journalism, which has been really exciting.
And why do you think people want to get involved with stuff like this if they're not a journalist? They're not trained or, necessarily got the skills that are typically required of people. What do you think it is that makes people want to be involved with the news?
Well, I think... And we run quite a few different live events, or sort of events where we meet up with various people in the network. And I don't know, my general sense is that people are hungry for a sense of connection to the stories of their lives. And I think they want to participate in that, both because they see a lack of accountability and they want to see that happen. And for someone who comes forward and says, we want your knowledge, we want your expertise, we want to hear from you, that people respond really well to that open call. But they're realizing also that they can contribute in very different ways. Some people really just like being our cheerleaders and continuing to share stories that they don't traditionally see in the media. But then we have people who really just want to bring their data skills or we've had more recently some kind of legal skills or designing skills that have been really important to it as well. And I think we are still learning a lot about this, but it's been proving really powerful.
And do you think this is something that traditional newsrooms are looking towards and trying to imitate, or at least thinking about imitating?
I think there's a lot of thought being happening around that. I couldn't speak for most of the traditional news space. I think there's a lot of conversations being happening right now around engagement. I think listen is the thing I keep hearing everywhere. Everyone's trying to listen, which you'd think, shouldn't we have been listening from the beginning? But listening seems to be the new buzzword. But I think the Beer Local does that, but I think importantly we care about listening, but we care about actually acting on what you're hearing, and trying to really build that into what we do. So I do see that a lot. You're seeing the Huffington Post did a really cool listening project. I actually think that this was really cool, in which they kind of had members of the public come into it. You've got the News Club people who are really interested in pulling that in, but obviously these are a little bit less traditional. I think you're seeing traditional models really thinking about engagement more deeply and how they can connect with their readers. I don't know how far that's going to go, though. It'll be interesting to see.
And you guys did a couple of submissions to the Cairncross review.
Yes.
I was just wondering, in broad terms, what you think about that review into the press as it has been billed. You know, what that means for organisations like yours, or indeed what it means for the future of the news market.
Mm. Well, I think it was, you know, it was a breath of fresh air, and it was really great to see it. But equally, it was it's a very wide remit. If you look at what's on there, it's looking at everything from what the internet giants are doing to kind of what the hyperlocal bloggers are doing. So we submitted two different submissions on behalf of the Bureau of Investigative Journalism. One was a call for journalism to be recognized as a charitable act, and so that journalist organizations could apply for charitable status, which will hugely take steps forward in making kind of the business side of it a much easier job. And the other submission was the Beer Local itself was really showing Cairncross that there can be new models and different models that come forward, and the importance that we see in having experienced that for 2 years, a lot of our learnings, and a lot of that is that we need plurality, we need new models, and it needs to come in different forms.
Fabulous. Well, I'm very excited to see what comes next for you guys. We've already seen you on stage. And we've got Rachel Hamada, the community organiser, coming up later on as well.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
So I'm still here at the News Impact Summit in Cardiff, and I'm very excitedly joined from somebody who's not even from the UK. So this is Andrea Faye Hart, who is from Chicago. Mm-hmm. You are an executive director and a founder of City Bureau, mm-hmm. one of the most exciting startups in news today, and that is why you're the keynote here at News Summit. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what you guys are up to?
Yeah. So thank you for that. That was really nice of you. We're big fans of stuff here too. So, but City Bureau itself is a 3-year-old nonprofit. The short answer of what we do is we reimagine local news with a focus on the south and west sides of Chicago, and we run 3 programs out of our home office on the south side, where we basically are trying to engage and center the community around community journalism and figure out ways to sustain funding that work.
Right, fabulous. So I often see you guys coming up with what seem like quite exciting come down and do X, Y, and Z type opportunities. Tell us about the approach that you're taking to getting people involved back in their communities and in journalism itself.
Yeah, I think at the heart of what we do is about relationship building, and I think good journalism should mirror that of a healthy relationship, and that doesn't necessarily mean
smooching.
doesn't mean smooching. It doesn't even necessarily mean applauding each other. I think it means trusting one another and holding each other accountable. I think that's often at the heart of good quality relationships, and that's what we look at when we're trying to build relationships with communities that exist, and also build a community around our work. And so much of that requires face-to-face convening. So we host a weekly workshop series called The Public Newsroom, where we invite folks who are journalists and non-journalists to debate, deconstruct, and discuss local issues. Partially the reason we do that too is because Chicago is one of the most segregated cities in the country, and so it really matters to try to be able to have consistent convenings that look like the city itself, so they represent an intersection of people and an intergeneration of people that don't often interact because of that segregation. So we love to also bring in a lot of folks during the public newsroom, because it gives our journalists a chance to reframe and rethink how they report on those issues. That's really priority number 2 outside of the building relationships, is that. But a lot of what we do is listen really well and deeply to the people that we serve to try to understand what it is they need, because sometimes it looks nothing like a reported story.
Okay, so give us an idea of some of the topics that have come up through this kind of engagement process and how you've gone about covering those topics, if it's not, you know, a 2,000-word article that nobody reads.
Yeah, so we actually, somebody at one of our events asked us to look into the role of Chicago Police Department and Chicago Public Schools, because they have resource officers in the schools to basically look into their backgrounds. And so we did. We had a fellow that did it for a year and basically found, surprise, surprise, that there's very little oversight between those bodies, and that there were, in fact, police officers in schools who had not only shot and killed folks, but teens themselves in serving in schools. And so we released that after a year of the reporting. And that was a traditional article. But what we did after the fact was we hosted a public newsroom with a bunch of community groups who were doing work to remedy that, and allowed people to give feedback to those remedies and also just become aware of them. So there was there's a youth-led organization that's been trying to get a bill passed in the state around suspension, and lowering the suspension rate. And so folks were able to learn about that and contribute to that, in addition to sort of having a distilled version of the report itself, like sort of the top 10 facts of understanding CPD and CPS. So that's one example. A lot of it ends up translating into events or other methods of delivering the information.
And do you think it's having an impact on how policymakers are thinking about what they're doing, whether that's at a city or a state or even a national level? And do you think it's important that the audiences start to see that, you know, it's not just that we've written something about this, but actually something's changed because of you getting involved and us making a noise about it?
I do think that's important. To some extent, I don't think it's entirely the role of the journalists to be doing that. I think that's why we sort of talk about opening up and giving journalistic power away, so that everyone can understand how better to do that. And some of the reporting we've done has translated. That did translate into a deeper investigation for the Inspector General within the city of Chicago, who just recently released a report and recommendations on how to reform those resource officer positions. But also, we train and pay folks to attend public meetings to document them. It's our documenters program, and part of it is to free that information so that people can then turn to their alder person and go and try to advocate for things that they want to see changed. So we do still believe in journalism being a source of holding powerful forces to account, but we just don't think only journalists should be doing that. So part of what we do, in addition to reimagining local news, is to thinking about our role in a civic sector and civic processes that we should also be influencing.
And I read an article about the Chicago Sun-Times having at one point having bought a pub in order to monitor
they
local
did,
officials. Tens of years ago, it sounded quite innovative. Are other new, legacy, older news brands looking at what you guys are doing and thinking, shit, we should have done that? let's do it now.
No, I wish the legacy institutions in Chicago were a little more receptive to collaborating than they were to trying to save themselves. I think, unfortunately, they're trying to sustain a model that doesn't exist anymore and never really truly served everyone. We do have ProPublica Illinois collaborates with us often, WBEZ, the radio station, local public radio station, and The Reader, the alternative magazine weekly there, and then other sort of community newspapers. But, Sun-Times, Tribune, we've had folks go on and be hired at the Sun-Times, which is great. We love it when people get gainfully employed who've worked with us, but we haven't seen much of an internalizing or even an openness to replicating some of this stuff. I wish they would. And I say that same even of, especially of local TV. Most folks in the state still get a significant amount of their news from local TV, and they are the sleeping giant in all of this in terms of trying to actually change and do things for the better.
And how does all this get paid for? The crucial question, you know, whether you're a legacy news brand chasing dead print advertisers. Or anybody else?
So currently we sustain a lot of our stuff through foundational support, but we are trying to explore other models of revenue, whether it's some of the consulting we do, which we've gotten money for, as well as some of the tools we've been designing around documenters. But then also membership is really our priority, because we want, if all of our programming is supposed to look like Chicago, we want our funding too as well. We don't believe in concentrating our funding in one source. And so if we're able to get enough members to sustain a significant portion of our budget, it helps us stay independent and accountable to them. So that's really the big thrust that we're focusing on currently.
So we certainly have that kind of language being talked about here in the Bureau Local, where actually I used to work, has been spearheading efforts like that. Do you think we have to change the conversation around kind of what news is and why it matters in order to get people to buy membership? And can it only be, you know, the people who are able to pay that end up getting to be members, and everybody else kind of is as excluded as they were by the previous system?
I don't know if we need to change the conversation or start having it. I think there's a lot of false assumptions that, like, that conversation was happening with people when it wasn't, and it was happening with everyone when it wasn't. So I think part of it is taking a pause, and what I'm going to talk about later today is, like, we missed a step in actually realizing we forgot to humanize journalism itself. We talk about humanizing a narrative, but that's sort of the end game. That's like the front-facing symptom. It's not the root of us and what we do and how we operate necessarily. The story is, you know, is one part. And so I think part of it's like, how do we include more humanizing or listening practices as a whole in it as an institution? And then do I think we can start figuring out how to talk about what it looks like to get people to invest? Because I do think the investment is there and the interest is there. It's just a lot of people feel very burned and have a rightful distrust of local news.
Right. Well, that all sounds very exciting. And for those of you who don't know Andrea on Twitter, you definitely should start following her now. She is somebody who I saw from a mile across the room and thought, there she is. I know you from Twitter.
Cartoon in real life and on the internet.
Indeed. Well, thank you so much. I'm really excited to hear you speak later.
Thank you.
The same old story, but this time there's a difference.
That was just some of the things the Caring Cross Review probably won't tell us, courtesy of the folks who put together the News Impact Summit programme. It was Anne-Marie from Stoke-on-Trent Live who brought up nostalgia regarding her paper's new local meetup at the museum, no less. And this wasn't the only time it was mentioned during the day. I really hadn't expected that this would become a theme, but I guess when only 14% of 16 to 24s in the UK use newspapers, according to Mediathek, legacy brands and audiences are certainly skewing towards those who only remember the past. She also said on stage that upwards of 90% of Stoke-on-Trent Live's news tip-offs now come from Facebook. Will these times see the height of laziness amongst reporters, I thought? Or is it just a reflection of where audiences are, not only on Facebook, but also everywhere, snapping photos, sending word? Both Megan and Andrea talked about how focused their organisations are on listening. Megan called it the new buzzword. Yes, folks, listening is the new listening. But not just listening, participating, skilling up their audiences and more. The Bureau Local and City Bureau are both looking at membership models, but currently both rely on grant funding. The former told Cairncross to let media organisations have charitable status, while the latter is monetising what it knows about its city in the form of consultancy and tools. But it was Andrea who said legacy brands were too focused on saving themselves to collaborate, which was the feeling I got when I read the terms of the Cairncross Review, and that they were so limited to looking at the sustainability of high quality journalism only in terms of the press. And what about those sleeping giants? She also mentioned TV stations. Not up for a real debate in Cairncross, but something that soon too may only be a thing for us to reminisce about. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Journalism Today. And again, please do drop us a line at journalismtodaypodcast@gmail.com. We've just learned through a new book that Barack Obama read and responded to 10 of the 10,000 letters he got each day as president. We can't promise that we'll do that, but try us anyway. The music for this podcast was provided by Poddington Bear.